This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
About the Nancy Guthrie case, let's go over to Lil Bri, Brian Koberger. He has filed to withdraw the guilty plea he entered for the murders of Kaylee Gonzalez, Madison Mogan, Zanna Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin. The whole filing leans on what was recovered from the victim's hand, and almost nothing being reported about it seems very accurate. Retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer is with myself and retired FBI Special Agent Robin Dreeke today. As we break down where this is at, let's start with what the claim is. And it's from the broken plea book, basically. He's citing what the author cited. It's not from an actual report. The FBI lab took debris from Ethan Chapin's hand. The word they used was debris, not clumps of hair. That was in a book that was written. That's not part of the actual report. So I think that's important to understand, number one. But Koberger doesn't quote the actual police report. He quotes a book and says, see, look at that. That must be something here. They compared it against one person on earth, Brian Koberger, and wrote down that none of it matched him. One of the strands matched Ethan's own hair. The rest, we don't really know, wasn't matched to anybody. Then the report says the rest was preserved for possible future comparisons. 3 years on, nobody has ever publicly established whose it was. His petition calls it clumps of hair, not language from the filings, from the broken plea book. That he thinks proves his innocence. The honest answer is we don't know what it proved because nobody finished the actual work. What's your take on this, Jen, on the clumps of hair? Is this something that can be very quickly explained and okay, that's great. Isn't that cute, Brian? You came to us with this. Here's your answer. Go back to your cell.
Well, no, I can't be easily explained because they're going to have to do a lot of work to get the DNA. Secondarily, I mean, he has thrown his biggest advocate and somebody who, you know, I got to admit it. I mean, it was $5.5 million that went to her team.
Yeah.
So she had other motivation. But I have never seen somebody so zealously represent somebody. And I mean that seriously.
Yeah.
She would have three experts when only one was needed. I think she had four experts maybe when it came to the genetic genealogy when she was trying not to have that put in, something like that. It was outrageous. The media, when she wanted the media out, she had three experts there do charts and graphs. And it was unbelievable what she did. She was a zealous advocate of his. So I think he's going to be hard pressed. Having said that, why is anybody surprised? It's funny. I put out a tweet about this right when he pled. I said, this is all in the plan. This is his plan. There was no way he was going to sit there. He bided his time for the right time when things had kind of softened down. And here he comes again out with the reveal. And I don't think anybody who really has followed him closely is at all surprised about this. And my only thing is, and I know this is insidious, if I tell you, if there isn't great documentation by Ann Taylor about everything she did that counterpoints what he is alleging, man, I will just really be shaking my head if you get where I'm going there.
Are the T's crossed and the I's dotted?
As I understand it, because I remember when Broken Plea first came out and I made the true attempt to read it and put it down because it was pretty unreadable. And I explored it, you know, because I explored it. And I remember, I think we talked about it with Bob and even Eric Faddis at the time. And that is the claims are just dumb because it wasn't part of the process yet. In other words, he pled guilty based on everything they've been through so far, which was a lot. It was overwhelming. And Ann Taylor was working. I mean, we all agree. We were scared she was going to do her job better than anyone else because she was really his advocate. And then he pled guilty before they could even process anything else in the file, anything, any of the other evidence, including debris in hands. And so it wasn't that it was done and overlooked or it was excluded. No, it hadn't been part of the process yet of the investigation of the trial, because it didn't get that far, because everything else prior to that was already overwhelming that he pled guilty to. Then he stood in front of the judge three times, asked, did you do this? Yes. Did you do this? Yes. Did you do this? Yes. To all the murders, did you get good counsel? Yes. Did you get good? I mean, it was so thorough. I mean, they did such a good job. And again, the claims made in the book that he's resting his laurels on, to my knowledge, not being a lawyer, listen to our lawyers say that it just isn't legitimate because it didn't reach that point yet where they would do that extra investigative work on it. So he's just barking in the wind because, you know, like we said with Rex Heuermann, I know I said it the other day, Rex Heuermann's using information as his only currency. So if he's got more bodies out there, as he gets bored and people aren't paying attention to him, he's going to start trickling out more information like Dennis Rader did, and like all these people that are narcissistic, self-centered, megalomaniac asses do, that they're going to trickle this stuff out. Since Koberger didn't have time in his short, pathetic life to kill any more people, he's spent his information currency, so he's going to be getting attention any other way he can. I think, I tell you what, as people start ignoring him, please ignore this freak. You know, the one thing we might eventually get as he gets older and more bored and doesn't get the right bananas that he wants in there is that we might finally figure out, and he might start trickling some areas maybe to look for where he secreted a knife, maybe where his clothes wound up, maybe how he took that car apart so thoroughly. So if you just ignore him, we might actually get a little bit more.
Great point.
Bill, I guess my fear on some of this is what was going on with the prosecutor's office, where, you know, how were the T's crossed and the I's dotted there with Bill Thompson, who we've affectionately referred to as Santa Claus several times on the program. Yeah. You know, we never saw him in action other than, you know, the statements that he's made, that the case never went to trial. I honestly felt I was not super feeling confident about Bill Thompson and where this was going to go and how strong of a case he was going to make. Not because the case isn't strong, but because I don't think Bill Thompson has the reps to do a case like this as effectively as Ann Taylor did. We're going to go back into this, I guess. We're going to take a look at some of this stuff. Where does it go from here? With these hairs that are, you know, or the debris, we should be clear. The verbiage was debris. If it is hairs, I guess it's hairs. Are they going to go test these because Koberger's making a stink? Or is it like, we don't have to do shit. You can do all you want. You can, you know, bang your head against the wall and hit the pots and pans. It doesn't matter. You've already pled. It's game over. We don't have to go investigate anything here. I guess what sort of levers does Brian Koberger have to pull here?
He has one lever, only one under Garza. All he can do is show ineffective assistant of counsel. That's the only ticket to get a new trial. Yeah. Hairs and all this other stuff, it's not going to do it. And I would believe if she did her job right, which we know how competent she was,
Yeah. She
should have documented all of that, exactly what was given to him, that he would have known about the debris, you know, that he had the full case file. And that covers her for in terms of what she discussed with him. Remember, he's accusing her of like making up stories of what it would be like in prison to convince him and coercing him. I mean, that's what he's saying. I find it absolutely nauseating that we are believing one word Brian Koberger says. But your point, Tony, is does it matter? And I don't believe it does at all unless they can show ineffective assistance of counsel. And I can tell you, if Ann Taylor doesn't have that documented, that would be stunning.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, and I also, in the last week, I watched the Idaho Murders College Nightmare, the Netflix special on it, which really focused on the victims, the families, the Gonzaleses. And it's a great show because, to the point, and I agree, the prosecutor didn't fill, you know, Santa Claus didn't fill your heart with the confidence and everything. And I thought this early on when I watched some of the video footage of the Moscow Police Department showing up on, like, I think a couple of weeks ahead of time with a noise complaint or something, and how those law enforcement officers interacted with the students. I was really impressed. And when you watch that special, same thing. I was very impressed with, you got a very small department with the Moscow PD, and I thought they did the investigation very, very, very well. The leadership internally in that, I thought, was very impressive. It wasn't chaotic. It was very structured. They didn't have a huge lot of experience, but they knew how to deploy what they could. They knew how to partner with people, and I think they worked very good with the prosecutor's office. In other words, very rarely in life do you have everyone firing at 100% or 110%. So when one person is falling maybe a little bit short, you got the other one taking it up because they're doing a great job. And I think Moscow PD did my props to them. Very rare that we can say a police department in one of these cases did a great job. I really think they did.
One of the questions that gets thrown out here, and it's the first thing that ran through my mind, was, okay, because if we're going to go back to what the thing Koberger's arguing is that he wasn't told about the handful of debris. Ann Taylor can have done her job, you know, stunningly in every other lane. But if he wasn't told about that, and it was, you know, basically phrased in the book as it was some sort of, you know, exculpatory evidence, I don't know that it really truly is at the end of the day. There's a thousand things that point to Brian Koberger. But people are going, why did Ethan have a handful of anything? Wasn't he killed in bed while he was laying there? Didn't even really know what was happening until it was too late. I saw one of the comments said Steve and Christy Gonzalez talked about this. They said that his hand slipped behind the bed and touched dust bunnies. I mean, I can see that. I guess that does make somewhat amount of sense. But we don't really know for sure. I guess, why does he have a handful of anything to begin with? I mean, it feeds the conspiracy, folks. And that's where I'm like, okay, well, what's the answer to that? Why would he have a handful of that? Maybe that's the answer. What do you think?
I love that answer. It was funny. I was just looking for a set of car keys. And I reached up on this shelf that I haven't been on. I mean, there's hair, there's dust bunnies, there was a cobweb. I'm like, I was just looking for my car keys, but because nobody has, or these car keys, because nobody has been up there, I mean, and under a bed, and just imagine the hairs and everything that could accumulate. I mean, I don't want anybody looking under my bed, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a place people don't clean as thoroughly as they probably could. I agree with the Gonzalez family. And then beyond that, there are all of these documents are bait stamp, BATES. They're all what we call baits. So there are particular numbers that are assigned to everything in that file, everything. And so there's going to be a record that Ann would have made about what baits went to him, baits 1 through 20,000. And then I sent the whole disk with these terabytes on this date. This is something that's, and I know when you talk to Bob, he can verify this, that this is something that as a defense attorney, it's defense attorney 101. Just like prosecution 101, I'm going to keep track what I give to the prosecutor because my prosecutor isn't doing that because I'm giving the evidence.
As the
mope. Working the case.
And here's an important thing to keep in mind, I think, for everyone that thinks this is something big. So Koberger is basing everything that he's doing, because if you look at the language, it's cut and paste directly from the book Broken Plea. So let's look at where Broken Plea came from. Broken Plea came from a very retired FBI agent from years ago who never worked homicides inside the FBI, who got this from one of the people that worked for Ann Taylor that had signed a non-disclosure, broke the non-disclosure, and handed over files to this to the author of Broken Plea, didn't conduct interviews, didn't conduct anything. So this is all hearsay from a file given by someone who wasn't allowed to give it in the first place. So take it all with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I agree. My concern is if there was an over, I mean, what happens? What happens if Koberger did not get the baits on this? What if he did not, for whatever reason, and I'm not saying anything nefarious or that Ann Taylor intentionally withheld anything, but, you know, human errors happen. Sometimes the files don't get where they're supposed to go. Does he have a leg to stand on if he says, well, I never had that information when I made this decision. And they can prove he never had that information when he made that decision. I mean, human error can restart shit. And I'm would this do that, even if it's shown that he didn't have it? I mean, we don't know the answer to where it goes though right now.
Well, I think it's the totality of proving that a lawyer gave ineffective assistance of counsel.
Yeah.
That is something that is a pretty high bar,
yeah,
considering he's convicted, to go over.
Sure.
I don't even think that would be enough. I know Bob will probably know that answer better than me, but I can't think of one case that I ever worked that got to the appeal stage where something like this was thrown up at the wall and it ever stuck.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't know. I mean, crazier things have happened. You know, who would have thought we're going to have Alec Murdaugh trial number two?
Well,
you know, I mean, it's a different total dynamic, but it, you know, it's like stranger things have happened. You know,
so here's here's the legal standard for it. Under the Supreme Court Strickland versus Washington test, the defendant must prove two things: deficient performance, that the lawyer's work fell below an objective standard of reasonableness, basically not. That no competent attorney would have done what they did. And the second is prejudice, that there is a reasonable probability the outcome would have been different if the lawyer had performed competently. So it's an extremely high bar. It's an uphill battle, unlikely.
It'll be fascinating to watch, and I hope it goes nowhere and Brian Kober can go back to his cage. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.